Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there, everybody. Island Vibes this morning on Sports Daily, Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. And we're glad to be with you on this Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here with you. And we've got Max Power producing. He's always in the spirit on a Wednesday as we get you ready for another day in the sports world, another day of Chiefs training camp, a day after a pretty thrilling win for the Aftershocks. And we hope a chance to play the KU alumni team at Coke Arena on Sunday night. Should be a lot of fun. We'll get into that as we make our way through. We'll get into the Royals. We'll look at their loss yesterday. We'll look at the latest trade rumors and all the things going on there. And some college sports news trickling out as those camps are underway. Some more thoughts on the college football playoff. Where does Brett Yormark stand? Where does all the conference commissioners stand? There's kind of a divide going on right now with the playoff format expansion and what that would look like. We'll get into all of it. It's all what's on tap here on a Wednesday. It's brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, WBC Delano's debut brew, Hatfield's Mama, which is a German Kolsch, a clean, crisp character that's smooth and refreshing. Make history with Hatfield's Mama, Wichita Brewing Company, Delano's debut brew, available at all three WBC brew pubs. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Happy Wednesday. Good to see you today. We've got a lot to get into. Aftershocks, that was so much fun to watch last night for the TBT. So looking forward to getting into that and everything else going on today.
And I think we have Shri Islata back from vacation. So we'll see if Shrius is able to stop by and chat a little KU with us. They're starting football camp tomorrow, their first practice, I believe. That at least media is invited to. So we'll get some thoughts on them and Bill Self talk this week a little bit as well. And we'll dig into all of it with Shrius in the next hour if he is indeed back on from vacation. I believe that he is. So we'll have that for you. Sorry, the Aftershocks, Tommy. We were watching that and just I cannot get enough of the Elam ending. I've said it a million times. I love it. I genuinely think it should be how we end basketball games. It sets up every game to end on a buzzer beater. And, you know, give it to me right into my veins. It makes a tournament full of guys, you know, it's not an exhibition tournament. They're playing for $1 million, but it's a tournament that, like, I could never see myself before 2019 when the Aftershocks first got involved in this, caring a sliver about this, and then it comes and you see the support and that makes it fun. And then you see the way these games end and that just puts it over the top. I love this tournament. I'm excited about this team's chances. The other big news, Tommy, is now because of ticket sales and because of what's happened in other spots of this tournament, Wichita State hosts this thing potentially if they hang on through a championship, which is wild and fun to think about as they're back into this round of eight, a place they've been, I believe this is the fourth time since they got into this tournament in 2019. They've been tremendously successful, but they've never been able to get it over the finish line for the Millie. This should be fun.
Yeah, I mean, it is setting up at least to be a storybook type situation for the Aftershocks. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. There's a ways to go, and they've got to keep winning. But the fact that you know, they've been able to go this far and with the opportunity to continue to host as they continue to win, the fact that they knocked off the Houston alumni team, the Forever Cougs team yesterday, I mean, that's nothing to, you know, nothing to ignore. I mean, that's a really good team. They were the number one seed in the Wichita region for a reason over the Aftershocks. And so the fact that the Aftershocks were able to knock them off in thrilling fashion, you know, it went down to the wire. It was tied at 63. Marcus Keene able to hit the game winner for the Aftershocks. I mean, that tells you that this team feels like they can go all the way. That's been the storyline, I think, from the beginning that, you know, hey, enjoy this squad, enjoy this collection of players. They've got the talent and the ability to be able to go a long way in this tournament.
They'll face the winner of tonight's game between JHX Hoops, Jayhawks Hoops, and Heartfire. They play in that Kansas City Regional Championship. That one is tonight. So we'll get there. And the other thing we always miss on is the Aftershocks playing either the KU or the K-State alumni team. It always eludes. We talked to them last week, and Zach Bush brought it up. Like it could happen. And how much fun would that be on Sunday night? It's already going to be good Sunday night. You want to talk about real good? You put the Jayhawks alumni team up against the Aftershocks at Coke Arena on a Sunday night, and now you're into, would this be the quarterfinals, the Elite Eight, basically? I don't think they're allowed to call it that, but just for all intents and purposes, let's go. Like, this thing's fun. And, man, that game last night ends on the three-pointer. It was coming down to the wire. You could feel it, too, like the entire second half. You're like, this thing, they're going to be neck and neck going into the Elam ending. And, again, for those who don't watch and don't know what we mean when we mean Elam ending, basically they play, and at 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter, they add 8 points to the leading team score, and you play to that number. And so every single game, A, ends on a buzzer beater, and B, you don't foul at the end of the game to try and keep yourself in it. It makes the end so much better. And it should be incorporated everywhere, across the board, all across basketball, at every level. That should be how basketball games are ended.
It's interesting because the longer that the TBT is around, I think the less of a novelty the Elam ending is. I mean, I remember when the Aftershocks first got involved and I was watching the tournament the first couple of years. I'm like, okay, this is a little bit hokey. Like, I understand what they're doing and what they're trying to do. But it seems a little novelty and whatever. And now, because it's gone on for so long, you just get used to it. It becomes a standard way to end a basketball game now. It's not a, you know, ridiculously crazy way to end a game. It makes every single game entertaining. And turning the clock off, being able to play to a target score, every single game ends on a game winner. That just, it makes it that much more exciting. So what I love is that the longer that the TBT is around, the less of a novelty the Elam ending is, and the more legitimate I feel like it becomes.
Well, didn't they incorporate it into the NBA All-Star game?
They did, yeah. They did.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it would take. It'll never replace the ending of all basketball games. I wish it would, but I don't think that's ever in the cards. Man, I wish it would go into every other scenario possible. It would not take long for people to see it. Could you imagine a high-profile game ending that way? It's so much better. It's so much better. It would be faster and quicker, which is always something like I think TV networks are interested in. So, you know, either way, we get it for this tournament. We get the Aftershocks who continue to play well, and let's enjoy it. And, you know, the fans answered the call, I think, last night. That was a great crowd at Coke Arena, and we'll see if they can do it again. And I hope that they do, because those environments are fun. It reminds you of, you know, old Shocker basketball, quite frankly. And we don't know all the players quite as well that are major contributors this year, but they're quickly becoming fan favorites. It's a fun team to watch. So congratulations to them. We'll see if the Jayhawk alumni team can follow it up tonight with a win and get up here Sunday night for a game at Coke Arena and what would be just a blast. When we come back, we'll talk about the Royals game yesterday, and we'll continue, as we do most days, to kind of scour the trade deadline a little bit, see what's out there, and what's available for the Royals, or what they might be making available, as they're now 4 games under .500 with about a week to go until the trade deadline. We'll be right back.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Austin says Elam ending forever. He's with us. Appreciate that, Austin. Great listener of the show. We appreciate you all being here with us today. The Summer Concert Series back in Wichita, Navskar Park this weekend, returns Friday. The Astronauts live on stage. Gates open at 6:30. Show starts at 8. Enjoy free live music, food trucks, and Friday night fun all summer long. You can find the full schedule at kfhradio.com. Tommy, the Royals are losers yesterday. Matthew Boyd shut them down, as he's been doing to a lot of people this year. I'm not sure. Is he in the Cy Young running? He's been really good.
I don't know if he is or not. He should be. If he's not, he was lights out.
Yeah, he was. He's on a heater right now too, of some length here. But the Royals can't get anything done against him. Rich Hill, in his Royals debut, I thought was pretty good. Fine. Set some records with his age, and that's what everyone, you know, wants to talk about, and all the things that he did is how old he is and all these things. But the bottom line is he came up and he filled in pretty well. And I don't know. I think we got to pay attention to that, because they've got some injuries that they're dealing with. So it's nice that he's there. I don't know. I assume that Lorenzen will be back right away. We haven't heard Lorenzen's name tossed around as a trade candidate, which is a little interesting, but it hasn't been. I think it could be, but Seth Lugo continues to garner the attention. So ESPN's Buster Olney reporting yesterday, as he's just kind of scouring around, is that the Royals have shown a willingness to trade, but the intent is to compete again next year, which means they're not willing to part with the core of their pitching staff, according to Olney, and they want to improve their offense in the future and whatever it does. So what that tells me is the things we were talking about yesterday with like Chris Bubich. I think that's what the illusion is there, that with an A, not an I, is that they don't want to mess with next year's rotation, of which Chris Bubich would be a big part of it. Seth Lugo, he goes on to say, with that $15 million player option, that the idea in the league right now is other staffers think he's going to walk from that option like we all do, but it's not a known. So maybe the Royals are trying to paint it as he's not just a rental, but the reality is everyone knows he's kind of just a rental, at least to some level. And so that's where they're trying to, to evaluate Lugo, which, again, rentals are not what they used to be. The Royals did get Reagans out of a rental deal for Aroldis Chapman, but for the most part, you don't get top end guys. I will say though, Reagans came over in a deal like that. Look at a guy like Noah Cameron. Noah Cameron would have been the kind of player probably traded in a deal like that, right? He's not the top level prospect. Like I think those guys are out there. So it's still like, you've still got to get it right, but it doesn't mean there's no value. It just means there's not the same value as there was 15, 20 years ago. You're not trading Mark Teixeira for the haul that, he brought in a rental type scenario a long time ago. Like those days are numbered, but you could still get good players. And we'll see what the Royals want to do. It's a big game today. But that's the latest that I've seen on the trade deadline, is Olney's reporting yesterday that it just sort of backs up what we've been saying. It's Lugo or bust, it looks like.
By the way, I love the random Mark Teixeira reference. Whenever we can talk about the big techs, that's a good moment for me. What a fun player he was back in the day.
Thank you to your Braves, by the way, who gave up way too much for him and sent the Rangers to two World Series.
You're right. And he wasn't a Brave for very long. He was a rental for the Braves. But back to your point, and back to Buster Olney's reporting, not willing to part with the core of their young pitchers or their pitching rotation. To me, I think the question becomes, is Seth Lugo still considered a core member of your rotation? And I know that he's got the player option. It seems like a foregone conclusion that he'll decline that option. He'll walk, test the open market, all of that. But it goes back to the conversation that you and I have had at length multiple times about, Is it better for the Royals to try to, you know, receive a return for Seth Lugo now under the impression that he is going to walk and they're not going to be able to afford him in free agency? Or is it better to let it play out? And I think that knowing that there is the compensatory pick that the Royals will get if they make and they should make him a qualifying offer after this season, at least you don't walk away completely empty-handed if you just ride this out with Lugo. If you don't move him, if you don't trade him, if you see if this team can get to the playoffs with him in the rotation, at least you know that all you have to do is make a qualifying offer, and at least you'll get something in return. Now, is that better?
Do you then? Is that better than a return
in a trade? Doubtful.
Option. So, if he takes his option and walks, at that point, you can make a qualifying offer. Is that right? I don't know how it works with player options. I know how it works generally speaking. I mean, generally speaking, if you have a free agent, you make them a qualifying offer, you get the pick. I don't know if it's the exact same on a player option. I assume that it is, because I don't think you could be penalized for, you know, that otherwise teams would never give player options. So I assume that's what that process would look like.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I know that you're, you know, obviously you're able to get that comp pick once you do make the qualifying offer. So I would imagine that I think the way it works is that Lugo would decline his player option. The Royals then make him a qualifying offer. And then if he declines that, and walks and enters free agency, then they would get that draft pick in return.
Yeah. It's there. And there is always, they could still contend this year. I mean, that's also the other piece of this. And Lugo certainly helps them do that. You know, outside of losing every game over the next week, they're going to be in a range where the outcome is certainly possible that they could climb back into it.
And by the way, so there is a new article that came out, I mean, maybe 2 hours ago from Ken Rosenthal at The Athletic talking about the Royals. And he says that the Royals have made it clear to other ball clubs that if they move Seth Lugo, it's only going to be for controllable outfield help. They want a long-term solution in the outfield. That's what Rosenthal is saying. And he goes on to say that the Royals not only would consider giving Lugo a qualifying offer, but they also believe that they would be competitive in trying to re-sign him. And those are Rosenthal's words, that they feel like even if he does decline that player option, that they think they can be competitive in the open market to try to re-sign him and bring him back.
So that, I mean, that helps us answer a scenario we've long wondered. I don't know how often GMs and players and agents talk cheddar during a season, but there's no way they haven't at least had some conversations of that scenario. Like, all right, we're at the deadline. You're obviously a name. Like, what are you looking for next year? How is that going to factor in? So I think all these things are fine. And again, if they don't trade Seth Lugo, it'll be fine. If they trade Seth Lugo, it'll be fine. Both scenarios are fine. I think that it sounds like in both Rosenthal and Olney's reporting recently and others prior that the Royals have a clear goal with it and they'd like to get better, you know, through a Lugo trade. It's not like a rebuild. It's sort of like what they did with Brady Singer, I think, you know, try to solve an issue through a position of depth. And right now that's a position of depth. And again, there is the scenario that if you are talking to Lugo's people and you want him back and you know what it's going to take, that you still trade him away and still go try to bring him back. Like there, you know, I don't know what that relationship's like, but I mean, it sounds like it's pretty good.
And the one name that Rosenthal brings up, and I've seen Jeff Passan mention this name as well, is Jarren Duran. And Duran seems to get a lot more buzz with the Royals and that connection over the last few days or so because he's got 3 years of club control after this season. Rosenthal goes on to say that the Red Sox are not going to trade Duran for a rental. So the Royals would have to throw in prospects. They would have to make it better for the Red Sox by giving up prospects on top of a Seth Lugo type pitcher. So the Red Sox feel like they're getting some building blocks for the future for their organization.
Yeah, it's they just have outfield depth.
Yeah,
it wouldn't
be a Lugo for Duran straight up type trade. The Royals would have to bring prospects into the mix as well.
I would think so. I mean, Duran's got tons of control.
Yeah.
But what prospects, right? I don't think it's going to be like Lugo and one of the catchers. I mean, I would make that deal still if it were me.
I mean, Rosenthal does say that teams are targeting their young catching in particular. So
they just have so much of it.
Yeah.
And that's a player that, I mean, as recently as last year has been outstanding. It's a player that has, I'm going to pull it up just to know exactly what it is, but his contract is very controllable. There is a club option. So it's this year, and then he's not an unrestricted free agent, Tommy, until 2029. So you're looking at basically 4 years of control for a player who was an all-star a year ago, who was top 10 in MVP voting, who was an 8-WAR player, and this year in his age 28 season, so in his prime, right, you'd basically get him through his prime in a deal, is performing at minimum much better than the Royals outfielders collectively. But in this down year from a year ago, he's still a 2.5 WAR player. And I believe he's really coming on here more so lately. But he's been really good, and he's controllable. And yeah, if you can go get a player like that from a team that's still contending, which would be strange, but if possible, a strength-on-strength trade, I think you strongly consider it. You know, you just plug him in left field and your lineup set for this year and next year.
Yeah, I think, again, we've talked about this before at length. I think the one thing you have to keep in mind is, what is the health of Cole Reagans and Michael Lorenzen? When are you able to get them back? And then can you get your rotation to a point to where you feel like you've got that depth again, and you feel like that is, again, a strength of your team? No offense to Rich Hill. I thought he did fine last night. He didn't light it up, but I didn't expect him to light it up. The fact that the Royals put him out there, I think, shows you obviously how thin their rotation is right now. And so, yeah, like, if you can get an outfield bat, great. I understand that. But the last thing that I want to do is move, you know, a guy like Seth Lugo. Everybody always says that the best ability is availability. And right now, Seth Lugo is available. There aren't a whole lot of pitchers on that pitching staff that are available right now for the Royals.
So I don't totally agree on Rich Hill. I think Rich Hill's presence is meaningful. I think it's kind of important because they, you know, unless even if they're all hurt, like even if Lorenzen and Reagans are banged up the rest of the way, you almost have to look at it. I mean, we got to be realistic. They're 4 games under 500. I know that they have it in them to get on a run. I want them to. I'm optimistic that it can still happen. But they're 4 games under 500. If you had a chance to go get a guy like Duran, I think you're very comfortable with the gamble of Rich Hill being a starter for you the rest of the way. I mean, I think you have to be. That's a player, because you're looking at this to next year, and with Duran, you're looking at it for a long time, right? He's not going to ever cost you. I mean, you'll lose, you know, the arbitration number will grow, but it's not like a situation where you're putting all your chips into the middle of the table for right now. That's a trade, if you could get it done, that makes gobs and gobs of sense for both teams involved. And so, yeah, I think you take the risk of your pitchers getting back healthy, and you just ride with Rich Hill for a little while. I hope that Daniel Lynch gets back soon, so that if there is any extended time, maybe they can get a head start on seeing if he can, you know, be a starter again, like Bubich was, because that's also something that would be important for them next year. I don't think it's that big a deal to the Royals. I think it's a big deal for their chances to like go all the way this year to get those guys back. But I think they'd be comfortable with that based on Hill being down there and some of the other options that they have. We'll see. I'm not totally convinced the Red Sox have the appetite to trade Jarren Duran. I'm not. That's a big deal for them if they go and trade a player like that. And I know they've got some depth at the position, but man, if you're trading away an all-star caliber player for potentially a half a season of Lugo, I just, that seems...
That's why I think, I mean, the Royals would have to bring in prospects to the mix. They'd have to bring in potentially a top prospect to throw into that deal. And then at that point, does that become a little bit too rich for the Royals' appetite? You know, when they if they're not only parting with a guy like Lugo, but they're dipping into their farm system and they're giving away prospects. And I get the controllable aspect of Jarren Duran. I get the athleticism that he brings and all of that. You know, I would think long and hard, and it's not a knock on Duran whatsoever, but if I'm going to move Lugo, I'm going to want to find a trade partner that might just want Lugo straight up for somebody. Or if I need to dip into the farm system, not one of my top guys on top of Lugo. I don't want to mortgage the future and give up Seth Lugo at the same time.
So Duran didn't play last night, second straight game, third time over the last four that when they have played a left-handed pitcher that they've sat him. So I wouldn't call him like a rotational guy for them by any means. He's not that, but you know, it kind of speaks to their depth and maybe how they feel about it. And on the prospects, when you have three catchers and you have Salvi and Freddie Fermin, I don't think any of those catchers project out to be something other than a catcher. So it's not, I know it's the top of the system. That's where the Royals have a glut. But again, like a player like Duran is worth a risk on that for me, because you're not going to need all three of those guys. Now you've got to evaluate the three of them correctly and identify which one you'd be willing to give up and which one you want to hang on to. And you've got to still get that right. But the reality is, you only have room for one of them. So they're there. And if your greatest need is an outfield bat, your goal in the offseason would be to probably use one of those guys to go find an outfield bat anyway. Are the Royals really ever in a trade scenario going to find a more viable bat than a guy like Jarren Duran? I doubt it. Man, it seems unlikely.
What do you think the odds are that, you know, let's get to the end of the season. What do you think the odds are that all five starting pitchers that started the year with the Royals in the rotation are still on the Royals roster? Whether or not they're healthy and pitching, that's a different thing entirely, but like being a part of the organization.
40%, because it requires them having Lugo next year.
Yeah.
And I just think that's probably not the likeliest scenario, unless they've had a conversation where he really wants to and they know right now they can financially do it, but I doubt it. I mean, I highly doubt,
and they
because
could just,
of the depth that they have, that they would commit another $25 million to Seth Lugo. They'd rather commit it to Chris Bubich.
They could just be blowing smoke to Ken Rosenthal. Sure. But in the whole, like, they feel confident that they can be competitive with him in the open market, and at the very least give him a qualifying offer and all of that. You know, I'm sure that they want to downplay their desire to move him, because they feel like if they look like they want to move him, they may not get as good of a return or as good of offers from other teams. So I'm sure that they're going to try to downplay publicly, at least, the desire to move a guy like Lugo, while privately, you know, they're going to entertain those offers.
They lose the game yesterday, 6-0. It was disappointing to see the offense come to a screeching halt in that game, as they've been heating up as much as they have. But you know, there's an immediate chance to bounce back, and I do think, and they'll play, you know, Ray has been pretty good. It's just who they go up against tonight. They got a chance. If they win this series, it does sort of wash away the Miami series, but you know, eventually it's going to take more than 500 baseball for them to climb back into it.
It absolutely is. And you know, you felt, I think, pretty optimistic about the way that the offense was trending after they put up 19 runs in the two prior games on Sunday and Monday. And then the bats, of course, really came alive in Monday night's game, the opener against the Cubs. I get that Matthew Boyd has been really good, and that was on full display last night. But you got to put at least a couple runs up on the board. You can't get blanked like that. And so I don't know. That's always been one of the major issues that we've seen with this team, is that it's not the fact that they don't have the offense. It's the fact that you never know when it's going to show up or go away, and it hasn't been able to be consistent. And so, you know, hopefully the shutout last night is the exception and not the rule with this new look.
Hopefully, it's just a product
Royals.
Of Boyd, right? The fact that Boyd's really good.
Hopefully, it's more about Boyd and less about the Royals' offense. Unfortunately, there have been enough examples of a lack of offense for the Royals that it's hard to not think that it's maybe not just Matthew Boyd. It's also the fact that the Royals are not consistently producing offense.
Yeah, I'm just looking ahead. Let's look at their probable pitchers here to see how many of those they'll run up against in this next handful of games, at least in the next five. So Ray today has been okay, but you know, he's been good. He hadn't just been okay. He's been good. Gavin Williams. Well, we know Cleveland can pitch. You're going to face good pitching. So they're going to face some good pitching. I don't know what the Braves, how's the Braves starting rotation right now?
Pretty thin. Pretty thin.
Yeah. So they're going to catch good pitching today. They're going to catch good pitching probably all the way through the Cleveland series because that's the one thing Cleveland can do. And that has been a bit of a challenge. Like to me, like I would rather see the Royals face a great offense with the opposition having a bad starting pitcher than a team like Cleveland who might struggle offensively but have great starting pitching, because great starting pitching has really given the Royals fits. They are not equipped to just go out and dominate a great starter. But we'll see. Certainly a chance today. A day game, day baseball at Wrigley Field. Not something the Royals get to do all that often. That's kind of cool. Pregame coverage begins here at 1 o'clock. But try to go win the series. If they don't win the series, they are going to... I mean, it just gets harder and harder every time. Let's look at the wild card here real quick. They, with that game last night... I haven't even pulled this up yet. Yeah, they stay at 4.5. Boston lost. So the team they chase, which is Boston, is at the bottom of the Yankees, Mariners, but ahead, just slightly ahead of the Rays. They lose ground there, and we'll see. They're still 4.5 games back. So, sorry, they don't lose ground, but they lose an opportunity there to gain a little ground on the Red Sox for the Royals last night. They'll send Seth Lugo to the mound today. A sort of a debut for maybe the league a little bit. Do you think that there is more attention on him now in these starts? Because he wasn't elite his last time out. I do wonder if teams are really considering it, how much they get out the magnifying glass on these starts right now. Like, all right, if we're really going to consider Lugo, let's get a good look. Come on, Lugo, pitch well. But both because the Royals need it for wins, and if they're going to trade you, like, don't you just want him to come blank a couple of teams for 7 innings going down the stretch here?
Well, and he might be giving an audition to a team that might be interested in him, in the Cubs.
That's what I'm
saying. Who are going to need pitching help. And so the fact that, that he faces off against them at Wrigley today, that might be a little bit of an audition.
Not handy that he had his worst start of the year in his last time out against the Marlins. We need to wash that away real quick. Give him one of those classic Lugo 6-inning, 1-run kind of a game here, and we'll see. The other thing with Lugo is there is a chance, Tommy, in a world we're overvaluing him on the market because we have seen up close and personal how much he has meant to the Royals. Doesn't mean he means that much to the market. You know what I mean? Like, we have valued him so high because he's been such a big part of this turnaround for the organization. But he may not be that valuable out on the open market. I think that's possible too. And he'll get, I think, 2 more starts before the deadline. Hopefully he'll pitch really well in those starts. Again, both because the Royals need him and because the Royals might need him to be a part of a trade. Both ways. So we'll see what he does today against that good Cubs offense in the daytime. Could be a little room for some fireworks today in Chicago on the north side.
Yeah, nothing I like more than day baseball in general, but especially at Wrigley, and especially when you've got the Royals playing at Wrigley. I mean, that doesn't happen very often, and so enjoy it when you can.
Yeah, it'll be a cool environment. That game again, 1 o'clock coverage begins here. All right, coming up in our next hour. We may have Shreyas Lada in. We're going to see if we make that connection this week, or maybe off one more week. But either way, we've got lots of football going up and around all over the place. We got to check in from Chiefs training camp. We got to check in on what's being said among the conference commissioners about a college football playoff expansion. it's pretty interesting. We've talked about this before, but we kind of get the stances of all major parties and what they're feeling about it. So we'll get into that as well as we take you into the next hour. Let's give away some HGO on our way out of this hour. If you want to win some free iced tea, text the keyword tea to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. It'll be good for East Wichita, West Wichita, or Derby. Good luck, everybody. We're coming right back with another hour of Sports Daily.